Welcome to the Real Docs Podcast, hosted by Dr. Britt Lesher and Dr. Lisa Jung. Dr. Britt and Dr. Lisa are two licensed naturopathic doctors, passionate about all things health and wellness. They are on the mission to break down wellness trends, variety of conditions with a naturopathic and holistic lens. Tune in every Wednesdays for new episodes. This podcast does not act as medical advice and should not be used as a substitute for medical care. Please contact your healthcare professional for questions regarding your health.
Welcome back to Season 1, Episode 12 of the Real Docs Podcast. We are your hosts, Dr. Lisa Jung.
And I'm Dr. Britt Lesher. Just so you know, this is the last episode that we will be recording for season one. Woo! So we're taking a little bit of a hiatus, but we will be back in July.
Yes.
So we're essentially taking the month of June off. We will be back in July for season two, and we have already so many great episodes planned and possible guests on our podcast. We haven't solidified yet, but you will have to tune in to find out and see who that may be.
That went by super fast.
It did. It flew by.
So today we are going to talk about fatigue, everything in between when it comes to fatigue, things that we are really looking for and thinking about whenever we have patients that come to say, hey, I feel tired, I feel fatigued, and these are kind of our thinking process. And
why am I so tired?
I would say fatigue is probably one of the most common and top complaints that we get from our patients when they come to see us.
I would agree. I feel like it's also one of the first things that we ask too, on like when we're reviewing all of the things that can go wrong, all of the other symptoms that we think about when we think of like our review of systems, mm-hmm. or when we're checking all the other things that are going on when somebody has a complaint. One of the first things is energy levels and, are you tired? Do you get burnt out? Do you get tired very easily? All of those types of things. If it doesn't come up then, it always comes up when we talk about sleep.
I feel like we probably have the similar intake form when it comes to our patients, right? Where there's a lot of, what is your energy level? What is your sleep habit? You know, how many hours are you sleeping? Are you sleeping throughout the night? There's a little bit about like mood stuff, because that can also be part of that conversation when it comes to fatigue, stress.
Amen. I was just going to say, we're feeling fatigued today.
Yes.
Today is a fatigue day.
So why don't we start with maybe what we would call the differential diagnosis when it comes to fatigue?
Yeah. So I like my buckets that I usually will think about when someone complains of being tired. I mean, obviously we're asking questions like, when do you feel tired? Is it like you're waking up in the morning and you're already fatigued? Are you already tired even after a full night's rest? Or is it something where as the day goes on, you're feeling like burnt out and, you know, maybe the mid-afternoon crash is happening? Or is it in a situation where like you're exercising, you're moving your body, and you're getting some fatigue, like you're burning out with physical activity? So I like to try to ask some of those questions to try to differentiate like what kind of fatigue it is.
I like that. Yeah, because not everybody feels the fatigue the same way, right? It's like, what time of the day? And I feel like when it comes to people who are like, I feel burnt out and wake up not refreshed and things like that, sometimes they'll get the little spike of energy kind of in a random sparts of the day. Usually I feel like evening time. Usually for us, that really is suspicious of something else when it comes to fatigue, but we'll get into that.
A lot of times people have a hard time differentiating between like fatigue and brain fog and just like their body being tired versus their mind being tired versus just like a metabolic sluggishness, right? So I feel like fatigue is such a generalized word, and sometimes it's hard for even people to differentiate. Like, for example, if people have like lower mood states where they're burnt out or they're even just depressed. Sometimes that feeling of just being brain tired or like not having the determination or willpower can feel like fatigue, right? Because you just don't want to get out of bed.
That is something that's really important to kind of differentiate, especially when you're seeing your provider or even us, to be like, you know, yeah, is it physically tired? Is it mentally tired? Is it emotionally tired? What is that tired or fatigue looks like for you? Because that can mean so many things. One of, I would say, common things that I always also screen for is nutrient deficiency stuff. Mm-hmm. Because for example, my intake has a little bit of like diet recall in terms of what are common things that you typically eat for breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks, water, caffeine, all of that. And even that small of a detail can really tell us a lot about what's going on in terms of nutrient end of things, as well as more of like the gut end of symptoms. If there's any sort of gut symptoms that you have on what we call review of systems, maybe you're having some bloating, maybe you're having some heartburn, maybe you're having diarrhea, that usually tells us that you're not really absorbing or digesting things either. So then most likely there's nutrient deficiencies that are probably contributing or causing fatigue.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I feel like something that I've seen in practice since I've been in practice, a main thing that I see with a lot of patients is iron deficiency. It is such a common thing that goes underchecked, I think. Just so people know, iron is something that we have in our red blood cells, and it actually is what is carrying oxygen in our red blood cells to our tissues. And if we need a little background science on why we need oxygen, if you think about all of your cells, we require oxygen in order to make energy, or ATP. And so when we don't have oxygen, it can cause fatigue very quickly because you're not getting all of those nutrients to the tissue, to your brain, to your heart, to your lungs, all of those types of things.
The things that keep you alive.
The things that run stuff. So I think that iron deficiency is something that I am always screening for, asking patients if they consume iron-rich sources of food like red meat. You know, I think of our vegan and vegetarian or even pescatarian patient population that may not be taking in a lot of iron, but also thinking of like our menstruating patients who are losing blood monthly and naturally losing iron monthly. And so I often will have that conversation of like, we need to beef up your blood, no pun intended, but every month when you're losing your iron sources, you need to beef up your blood. You need to replenish those stores because you're just going to go more deficient every single month.
Especially if you are also someone who experiences heavy bleeding when you are menstruating, you're more at risk of losing blood. I would say B12 kind of falls under too with that, especially vegetarian, vegan, pescatarian folks as well. And also, again, not to bring it up to the gut again, but B12 especially is really a harder vitamin for your body to absorb because it has to go into your stomach, get broken down by your stomach acid to be in the form to be absorbed and utilized. And if you're having issues with your gut, guess what? That's not happening. So oftentimes iron and B12, I would say, are probably the top two when it comes to nutrient deficiencies too. Some other things that can happen, hormones, speaking of bleeding, but not just those types of hormones. Definitely when we have hormonal imbalance, when it comes to our estrogen, progesterone, even DHEA, testosterone, that can definitely cause fatigue for some folks. But even the hormone that gets forgotten a lot of times because it's not really in that like sex hormone category is thyroid.
Yeah, I think like metabolism, or at least I like to think about it like in a female body. Through evolution, we have kind of evolved to produce hormones in order for us to be able to make another living being, right? So we need to be able to make enough energy to supply the body with all of those nutrients and with that energy in order to produce another life. And so oftentimes the thyroid hormone, which is the master metabolism hormone, is implicated in our reproductive hormones because that's the driver behind the reproductive process. So for those who don't know, the thyroid gland is a gland that sits in your neck here. It's kind of a butterfly-shaped gland, and it produces a hormone that then goes to your cells and is responsible for metabolism, for driving that metabolic process so that you can actually get things done. So whenever someone has hypothyroid or low thyroid function, you can see implications of that all over the body because it's involved in metabolism. Mm-hmm. And, you know, fatigue being probably the number one complaint, but also like things with your hair, things with your skin, things with your gut, things with even like mental health and your brain, like cognition function. So I think thyroid is definitely something that we like to check. And I know we have like our specific thoughts on like thyroid testing in general, just mm-hmm. because oftentimes, you know, patients come in and they are still tired and they're like, oh, well, I ran my labs with my primary care, my other doctor, and they ran a TSH, a ferritin, and B12, and that's about it, but I'm still tired and all my labs came back normal. You ever see that meme? It's like an MD and they're talking to their patient and the patient's like passed out on the ground and the MD's like, your labs are normal. Oh, and it's God. Like a smidge above low and the patient's like, okay, and they're like passed out tired on the ground. Oh, I think of that for my patients so often, because even just like lab reference ranges are not perfect and people are always like told that their labs are normal even though they're just like one step away from being abnormal and they're already symptomatic.
Mm-hmm. I know, I feel the same with my patients, like especially if it's labs that they ran like before us. They're like, yeah, like everything's normal. I still feel this way. Why am I feeling this way? And then we look at it together and I'm like, okay, well, either your labs looking at like thyroid panel isn't complete or it's actually off. The thing about lab reference ranges is that the reference range is depending on our population. Now, we know in our country and honestly to the state of the world, population is getting sicker and sicker each year, let's say. So based on the sicker and sicker the population gets, the more the reference range then gets widened to encompass everybody to say, oh, everybody's quote unquote normal, even though they don't feel normal. And then when that happens, then people who are actually, again, symptomatic, having these issues and coming to see us, they're like, well, our labs are normal, but I still feel this way. And we look at it, we're like, no, that's not optimal. That's not what we want your TSH to be. That's not what your ferritin we wanted it to be at, or B12 or whatever it is. So we're very, when it comes to especially like running labs, not just for fatigue, but just for a lot of different things. There's the reference range that the labs give you, and then there's labs that, or the range that we usually abide by or go with that makes more sense in terms of making sure that someone feels good and not symptomatic and they are being addressed correctly.
We've talked about this in previous episodes, just limited testing in general that sometimes gets done, at least when I'm looking at someone's thyroid. Or even iron, there's a full panel that gets run. Like, we're not just going to look at one tree and try to make a decision off of one tree in the forest. Like, we need to get the full picture. And that's what I tell patients. Like, in order for us to really understand what's going on, like, you're already getting blood. You're already going to the lab and getting blood drawn. Like, why not test it? We want answers. We want a more clear picture. Like, what's the harm in testing? And I think we've said this also before that, like, sometimes in conventional medicine, testing is limited because there's not too much that's going to sway their treatment outcome, right? So there's not much that we can do for the patient, or I should say they can do for the patient, if some of these other things come back abnormal. It's not going to change their trajectory of what they're going to treat. They're just going to give medication. Mm-hmm. So I think that a lot of times we are looking for those other labs, like the full thyroid hormone panel, even considering like thyroid nutrient levels to see if there's some like deficiency there in the actual nutrients that are required to make thyroid hormone. One thing that I have been commonly testing in patients too, just when they're talking about fatigue and this kind of feeling of like brain fog and more of like the mental fatigue, is vitamin D, because that is something that is so commonly deficient. And we oftentimes talk about vitamin D in the sense of like bone health and immune system health and like skin health and things like that. But we don't think about that like mental acuity and the depression possibly that can come with a vitamin D deficiency. So nutrient deficiency is like, I feel like the biggest bucket that we probably focus on.
And even in sunny Southern California, I cannot even count at this point how many patients I have who are actually vitamin D deficient. And I've always been taught, especially in residency, that this is my fault. I should have looked into it, to be honest, but it also kind of makes sense, right? The more close we are to the equator, the better the angle of the sun hitting, aka we can get more vitamin D and absorb it through our skin, right? But the further away we go, that angle changes. So then it's harder for our body to absorb vitamin D from the sun, from the UV rays. And then, you know, also the further you go, there's kind of the less sun that we have. I feel like omega fatty acids too. I see so many deficiencies, and you need the healthy omega fatty acids to make things go, especially for your brain, even for, you know, just needing good nutrients for so many different things. Aside from also the nutrient end of things, I feel like other common things that we see is chronic infections and maybe like immune system, because I mean, you probably can tell more about in terms of like autoimmune things. And then a lot of also what we see is chronic infections under the umbrella of Epstein-Barr virus, mold, candida.
Yeah, I feel like just viral. Long COVID. Viral infections or just infections in general. So an infection is essentially like any bug, pathogen, virus, fungus, bacteria that comes into your system, your body, and then your immune system now has to siphon resources and create immune cells, create this like energy essentially to try to eradicate that, right? And on top of that, you're having to really detox the body in order to get that stuff out. And so I think chronic infections is something that comes to mind when we think of like someone who's just like has a debilitating amount of fatigue, a debilitating amount of tired, like they have no exercise tolerance, they can't move their body in which they used to, they have the brain fog, they have the physical tired of like just feeling weak. Chronic infections just do a number on the body because they're so hard to get rid of and leave a lasting impression on the immune system. And so the thought process in naturopathic medicine that we try to address is really giving your body the rest it needs in order to like fully clear an infection, but also the tools and resources to be able to like mount the response and actually clear it. Because I think the lack of that immune, that robust immune response, because of like so many things that we have to deal with on a consistent basis. Like imagine being stressed and burnt out, and then now you're infected. Like, how is your body going to mount that? how is it going to win that war, right? If we talked about like our immune system being our soldiers, like we're going to lose that battle and we're going to have to keep fighting and fighting and fighting until it's gone.
Right.
So that's something that I commonly see too, where it's just like people are already immunocompromised to a certain degree and they are not able to like fully clear the infection. So then it just leaves that lasting impression on them.
I feel like that, you know, has chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia is kind of like within that too, right? And a lot of times, not always, but a lot of those conditions also, we uncover a lot of the co-infections and chronic infections that are found that contributes and causes the latter of the conditions too, right?
I wanted to bring up a point too, because like a lot of what I've been seeing now, and this is something that's like, I'm diving more and more into in my practice, just because I do deal a lot with like immune related conditions and autoimmune conditions, is this idea of mitochondrial like damage or disturbance. Because biology pop quiz, what's the powerhouse of the cell?
You better know the answer.
Goofy. I think that a lot of times because of these chronic infections or this chronic load on the immune system, our energy cells, the mitochondria, gets burnt out, it gets worn out. And so now we see this like big like uptick in all of these people that are promoting like mitochondrial nutrients, mitochondrial balance, mitochondrial restore, all of this stuff. NAD IVs comes to mind, the whole NAD fad and how it like regenerates your mitochondria and all of that. So there's definitely a big like health and wellness push that people are becoming more aware of mitochondrial damage. But it's something that I am just kind of like being mindful and careful with, just because, well, I already know NAD, even though it's a very powerful, you know, it's a very powerful nutrient, it is very expensive to get your hands on, at least in IV form. I think we have both tried NAD IVs. It feels like someone is punching you in the stomach while you get an IV.
I can see why it's kind of now the thing. I feel like since we've been in residency, and we, that was a while ago, that was kind of like the big start of NAD. And I would do, yeah, we would do NAD IVs a lot. That was a big part of my practice and my residency. And honestly, I like the idea of it, right? Because in those kind of immune system, chronic infections, those critters are also stealing your resources, so they are stealing your energy sources. In that sense, yeah, like we want to make sure we replenish, but if you're not really taking care of the critters that are stealing, then we're just feeding the critters even more, right? We're just supplying them more resources. Now, when it comes to NAD and NAD alone or just mitochondrial support, I felt like I've seen more people have an adverse reaction. Like, I would say, yeah, someone punching in the stomach or a panic attack. I've had many patients who we would do the slowest IV drip to the point that they were, you know, at the office for like 3-4 hours getting this one bag of IV, just the NAD IV, and yet they still feel like they're having palpitations, kind of short of breath, not chest pain, but just a little like discomfort or like chest tightness, like they're having a panic attack. Mm-hmm. They get kind of clammy, and it's not the most fun thing. Now, some people, I've done the shots. Mm-hmm. Some, I know now they do, there's like a transdermal one.
Like a patch?
That I see a lot. There's also NADH or NMR or NR in a supplement form, which I feel like I've seen better success with, because it's going through the process within the body, and it's more not so concentrated per se versus of going straight to your bloodstream, right? Mm-hmm. But I would say, yeah, I've only really seen maybe a handful of people get benefits from NAD that was good for them, but I would also say it only really lasted temporarily rather than it really doing something and then not having to be on it
Definitely, like, I feel like in those situations, maybe it is more from like trying to, get people more energy and trying to get them feeling better, but it may not be, at least in an infections in from an infectious standpoint, may not be like the root cause of why they're even tired to begin with. And so making sure that you're testing and getting rid of the actual infection is going to be very important. So there is a relationship between your hormones, and in this situation, I'm specifically thinking about cortisol, our stress hormone, and our immune system, because our immune system is very in tuned with like what's going on in our body. And cortisol is our stress hormone. So in a state of acute stress, your body needs to prioritize survival. And so naturally it will downregulate your immune system and kind of dampen the immune response. And so I think of my patients with chronic health conditions, autoimmune, chronic infections, and that acute state of stress really does downregulate their immune system. But when that goes for so long, like people's stress hormone really gets burnt out and they really can see a tick now, a spike up in their immune system. Once that acute stressor has left, the effects of it is like two times on the immune system. That's why people always notice, like, if you've ever gone through a period of time where you've been like super stressed out, and then as soon as you like take a vacation, as soon as you go on winter break, as soon as you go on spring break, as soon as you go take a flight somewhere and get out of that stressful situation, now that's when your immune system is like haywire, like I've come to play, and it's not fun.
Going back to the mitochondrial thing, the only time I would say I do really big focus on mitochondria is like long COVID, because that makes sense in terms of the mitochondria took a number when COVID infection was in the body, with the inflammatory cytokines and all of that we want to make sure we regenerate. But I feel like there's a little, I'm still kind of in this like phase of like, we can do without it unless it makes sense. Some other things I feel like we could mention, maybe I don't think we'll have time to kind of get into, but I definitely want to give it a shout out is heart related things. So hypertension or high blood pressure, even high cholesterol or hyperlipidemia, any sort of plaque atherosclerosis is another thing that we kind of think about. And then some other metabolic stuff like chronic kidney disease, diabetes, insulin resistance, so forth and so on. So I just wanted to mention out there, those are also things that we think about. I feel like since we're also on the topic of the cortisol, and the burnout, stress, all of that, I think we can segue into more of like the mood end of things too.
Yeah, so we kind of touched a little bit on it before about how like the mental fatigue can people get confused between like what actual fatigue is, and then like is it just brain fog or is it just like a low mood state, right? Because they look very similar to people, and there are definitely different categories of fatigue. So like the psychogenic fatigue or the more of the mental fatigue. I think that a lot of times depression is a main one that comes to mind, but also those people that have like the chronic anxiety and stress that they've just essentially hit burnout, because it takes a number on your system in order to go through that acute stress response. And so I feel like even people who experience regular like panic attacks and things like that, they just feel tired after that.
When it comes to, tying that together too, right? When someone is depressed, someone is anxious, someone is stressed out. Well, guess what? That cortisol response, and lack of energy, that contributes to sleep patterns, whether you are hypersomnic, so you're sleeping more, but you still feel tired because, there's really no energy mentally or emotionally that's coming more in like maybe the depression point, or because you're so anxious and so stressed out that you can't get into that sleep state. So you can have I don't know if this is a word, but hyposomnic, or just not sleeping well or not sleeping enough, all of that. So even though we're thinking about these conditions specifically, they all really tie all together in terms of our lifestyle, our foundations of health.
Yep.
That's why it's so important. People think, you know, oh, it's just sleep. Oh, it's just diet. Oh, it's just exercise or movement. But they really, really tie into so many things.
For me, to my time in residency, and, you know, we've just gone through this like very rigorous 4-year program where, you know, those times before an exam, you're not really sleeping that well. Like your subconscious is going and trying to retain all of that information that you just learned. And it does impact your sleep quality. And then you get thrown into residency where you're now working, you know, double the hours. And I was not fueling my body like correct. Sometimes I wouldn't eat breakfast because there just would be no time. And then you go home and you're still thinking and preparing for the next day and your mind can't really shut off. And it's just like a really hectic cycle. And I relate to my patients so much when they tell me that about their like lifestyles and their work schedule. Like I will literally ask someone to walk me through their day and like, what time do you go to bed? What time do you get up for work? Like, when are you eating breakfast, lunch, and dinner? All of those things, because all of that information is going to play into your energy levels. Like, are you fueling your body right? Are you getting enough adequate sleep? Like, what do we need to do in order for you to make sure that you're prioritizing your like health and your energy levels to set you up for success for the day? And oftentimes I see that where it's like people feel tired and they're not eating, they're not sleeping, they're not drinking water. Just as a reminder, oxygen is in water. They're in this like cyclic pattern where they're just like driving themselves into a hole. So if you've ever like woken up and been like, oh my God, I'm so tired. Like I just got a full night's rest, but I feel still so tired. I think that's a really good time to A, go see a provider and get your labs checked, and B, really sit down and think about your day and think about all of the little health decisions that you're making on a regular basis, and think about those habits that you have on a consistent basis and like what is there that is maybe not optimal that you could change in order to like promote feeling more lively, more awake, and things like that.
One of my favorite things to test with patients, I don't know why I haven't done it more lately, because for me, when I order labs for people and we're checking more of the cortisol, I'll add it to the blood draw lab. Now, that's only such a quick snapshot that it only really tells us what does it look like somewhere between 7 to 9 a.m., right? But we know in terms of cortisol, especially for stress, burnout, all of that, cortisol is a 24-hour pattern. It's a whole cycle. It's also the opposite to our melatonin or circadian rhythm, which we talked about during our sleepy mocktail episode. But one of my favorite things to do is the salivary cortisol testing, where it's a 4-point. So in 4 different times of the same day, the patient will collect saliva. I will not be collecting your saliva. And we get to see what your kind of graph looks like, what your pattern looks like for cortisol for that day. And common things that we see is either it's cortisol just kind of through the roof and just like a lot of this roller coaster ride, or the common things that I see that a lot of people don't understand until we do it is their cortisol is like flat line bottom. And that I would say is like very typical that I see for people who are that like chronic burnt out. I go to bed, I'm tired. I wake up, I'm tired. I drag myself through the day like a zombie, and they're just like flatline. Mm-hmm. And I just always tell them, like, are you alive? Like, what is happening? Are you okay? So, you know, I would say if your provider is someone who is open to do that or does do that, ask for them. Because I think that will give an insight to not only, you know, what's what else is going on when it comes to you feeling tired. You know, make sure you get your iron check, your B12 check, vitamin D check, you know, all these different things that we think about when it comes to fatigue. But the salivary cortisol also might not be a bad idea to get that check.
It also gives you a really good idea of, like, are you having cortisol spikes in your stress hormone when you're not supposed to? Because ideally, in a perfect world, your cortisol is the highest when you wake up and in the morning when you're, like, getting out of bed and you're looking for food and getting your day set up. And our body naturally produces the most cortisol that we should in the beginning part of the day. And then as the day goes on and the sun starts to go down, those levels should get lower and lower and lower so that melatonin can come in and take over. And commonly, I've seen, like, people getting the normal response in the morning, but they're riding high, you know, all throughout the day. And then when it comes time to, you know, even get ready for bed, they're having another cortisol spike, or they're, you know, whatever they're doing at night is driving a stress response that they can't get to bed. And then that just bleeds into your sleep cycle, which sets you up for failure the next day. So it is a vicious cycle and takes a lot of, like, investigation in order to determine, like, what really is causing it and how to go about treating it. A lot of times people are, like, unsure. I think it's a very common thing that people probably Google, ask Dr. Google and say, like, why am I so tired? And some things that I think that would be worth looking into is just, like, your nutrient levels, your immune system / inflammation, and see if there's anything there. Stress hormones was another big one. I think we can do a plug too for just, like, toxin load and your ability to kind of eradicate any sort of toxic burden that you have in your body.
Actually, on that topic too, just a quick plug too of sometimes it might just be an adverse effect to a new medications, even yep. supplements, some new thing in your system that's causing that too. So again, if it's already not clear, there's so many different things that can factor into why you might feel tired, and it really needs to be investigated, like Dr. Britt said, to figure out, okay, what is it that's causing you fatigue? I think that was our
little letired episode, because we're letired.
Yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Leave us a comment or send us a DM in terms of if there's anything that you have questions on from our episode today, or if you have any questions for you guys to hear us talk about for a next episode.
Come back in 1 month and we will be starting season 2. So we'll see you guys then.
Woohoo! It's going to be our summer break.
Woo! Summer break. I can't wait.
But yeah, we have so many things planned for you guys and super excited to talk about these new topics. And stay tuned.
All right, guys. Be real.
And stay well.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Real Docs Podcast. Don't forget to like and share this episode and follow us on our social media pages. Tune in every Wednesday for more episodes.